Welcome to CounselorAudioSource.net. Counselor Audio Source is a weekly podcast dedicated to the professional enhancement of practicing counselors, supervisors, and counselor educators. Look for us on the web at CounselorAudioSource.net.
I'm Dr. Marty Gentius from Kent State University, and this week on Counselor Audio Source, contributing editor Amy Friedling speaks with Dr. Nancy Taylor of John Carroll University about Dr. Taylor's ideas and work on forgiveness in counseling.
This is Amy Friedling. Today I'm here with Dr. Nancy Taylor, Assistant Professor in the Counseling Department at John Carroll University, which is located in University Heights, Ohio. Nancy, thanks for joining me today.
Good morning, Dr.
Thanks. Well, today we're going to be talking about forgiveness, and I know that this is a topic that's been of considerable interest to you over the years. I guess I'm wondering how you got interested in the topic of forgiveness.
I think there was a part of me that was interested in this topic from childhood because of the faith background and literally praying the Our Father when you would say, forgive us our trespasses. What are those things? And the whole notion of being a good person versus being a bad person. And if you did something bad, how did you make amends or take responsibility for it and could be forgiven? And that got tucked away in the back of my mind or in my heart, because as I moved into the adult world and into the field of counseling, for a long time forgiveness was seen as the province of religious studies or philosophy. Mm-hmm. And in fact, we have a wonderful course here at John Carroll on the philosophy of forgiveness. And the helping professional was not to go into that domain because it was seen as religious or spiritual. Mm-hmm. But I'm absolutely delighted to see what the American Counseling Association has done in initiative with a CERVIC and with there being competency for counselors to be able to work with their clients and meet them where they're at with a spiritual kind of dimension. And to be able to be with your client and find out what's important to them and be able to respond to them about the major questions of destiny, purpose, meaningfulness, which I think brings us into the realm of spirituality. In terms of counseling, I became more involved with the concept of forgiveness in my chemical dependency work. Chemical dependency mm-hmm. counselors, for a long time in working with the 12 steps, have looked at the need to make amends. In step 4, you take a fearless, searching moral inventory. It sounds almost terrifying, but it's about getting real. You know, what's the reality? What have I done? How have I offended somebody? And in treatment programs, part of the dynamics would be, how have I offended somebody? Whom do I need to ask for forgiveness? And how will that forgiveness process work? Because just because I said I'm sorry, does that mean somebody's going to forgive me? Not necessarily. I may have cut off my ties with that person. The resentment wall may be so huge. Can the wall of resentment be taken down? So I got into the concept of forgiveness maybe through a backdoor of shame and blame in the chemically dependent family and working through how people can build and restore relations. And then as I started listening to clients more carefully, whatever was the purpose that they had come for counseling, I could see that there were issues for forgiveness in their lives, whether they could put that label of forgiveness on it or not.
Mm-hmm. And what I hear you saying is a lot of times it's a matter of people asking for forgiveness, but I'm assuming it also means giving forgiveness as well. I've heard forgiveness used in so many ways. I guess one of the things I'd like some clarification on is, what is forgiveness?
I'm glad you're asking that, because I think there needs to be sorted out what forgiveness is and what forgiveness is not. And for me, the bottom line, and I think you're right on target, is forgiveness is a gift that you give yourself, whether the person who has committed the offense, so to speak, wants forgiveness or not. I think in terms of looking at forgiveness today, people look at the person who has been hurt and there has been some kind of offense, however slight or however heinous, and the whole nine yards in between. Instead of walking around with a wall of anger and resentment or maintaining a victim stance, being able to say, I want to let go of this. So for me, a bottom line about forgiveness is it's a gift you give yourself. Mm-hmm. And what it is about is letting go of the resentment to which you're certainly entitled. It's not like, what forgiveness is not saying the offense was okay. No problem here. We're over it. Mm-hmm. If you've been hurt, it is a problem. We can heal. And in that respect, we may get over it. But getting over it doesn't mean to act like it never happened. It did happen. That's the reality. About that reality, what do I think? How do I feel? What do I need to do to work it through? And that, in a sense, sets up a process model for forgiveness. When I can do the work I need to do to let go of the hurt, the anger that I have, and then take it one step farther, be able to wish the other person well. That's a concept that Robert Enright, who's a psychologist in Madison, Wisconsin, would hold on to for forgiveness to be complete. And I subscribe to that too. Not that I have to want the best in the world for the other person, but if we are all humans, I want no less or no more for any other person. Now, that's not maybe the easy place to get to, but mm-hmm. that's what we can work toward. And that suggests another piece about forgiveness. It's not something that happens as a choice point, as a product in time. I'm going to sit here and decide I want to forgive somebody over and done with it. It may take a lot of work.
It's a process. Okay. In talking about forgiveness, some folks might say that there's a part of that involves acceptance, accepting what's happened, accepting that certain things perhaps were beyond our control. Can you give me some sort of contrast between the two terms, forgiveness and acceptance?
In terms of if someone were saying, this is goes to the point again too of what forgiveness is not. Sometimes I think there's a mistaken notion or almost like a stereotype that I have to accept that it happened, meaning that that translates to it's okay that it happened. And it's never okay that I was hurt mm-hmm. or anybody else got hurt. That's not okay. But perhaps a more accurate term to use would be to say, I acknowledge that XYZ did happen. I can't pretend it didn't. I can't deny that it did. Oftentimes people deny in the sense of, if I don't acknowledge it, then I don't have to hurt from it, and it wasn't a problem at all. It's not going to go away until I acknowledge it. The nasty feelings that I have because I was hurt are not going to go away unless I name them and claim them and find some way to deal with them. So in the sense that I am acknowledging what has happened, I'm accepting the reality about it. Mm-hmm. But acceptance does not mean it's okay that it happened, I'll get over it, as if it never happened at all.
Mm-hmm. I'm assuming that's where some clients may run into an obstacle or two, saying, okay, it happened, but still not dealing with all of the feelings behind what's happened.
There's an old Carly Simon song, I haven't got time for the pain. And there's the notion, oh, I don't want to go there, I don't want to do that, then it doesn't hurt. But the hurt's there, and the wound is there, and it needs to be healed. And I think forgiveness is a process to do just that.
Uh-huh. And in your work in counseling, I know in addition to your work as a instructor, you also do the practice. One of the things I'm wondering is how you introduce forgiveness as a goal in therapy.
Sometimes people are, I find, in the territory of forgiveness without being able to name it and claim it. Maybe what would be helpful is if I describe a little bit about what this forgives process is.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes people have wandered into the territory of, in a sense, working through it without having the awareness of it. So it's about raising an awareness of what doing and saying, are you ready to forgive? Are you involved in would you like to choose to forgive the person for what happened? And it's a showstopper. Forgive? I'm never going to forgive that so-and-so or whatever. But what you can hear is the anger that the person still experiences to the offender for whatever mm-hmm. the offense is. So let me just tell you a little bit about the problem and then come back to using an example.
Okay.
It's first important for me to uncover the feelings that I have about the experience. So in uncovering those feelings, I may also get some insight. What is this offense? What is the injury that has happened to me? We can think of some heinous acts and where this kind of work would apply. If somebody's working in the rape crisis center, of course, and certainly not initially, but somewhere down the line, just even suggesting to the person that they may want to talk to somebody later on, the whole notion of forgiveness might come up. If someone lives in a chemically dependent family and has for a long time, and there have been all kinds of broken relationships, every aspect of that brokenness, in a way, can beg for forgiveness. Whether a person is ready to do it or not is a whole other story. So creativeness is a part of this, too, and that may be the goal of the count to help the client get ready when the client is ready, not to force it, as if this is a moral issue that's not obviously, or maybe not so obviously, for the counselor to do. So in this uncovering stage, when I am talking about how I have been hurt, and I may have come counseling because I'm a divorced woman and I have been hurt. What is the nature of the injury, and how has offense affected my life?
Mm-hmm.
If a person is presenting as a victim for whatever is the situation, how has the offense that has happened to me made me a victim? What am I a victim of?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's where the counselor can help the client get ready to give, because who wants to stay a victim? I don't want to be a victim. Nobody wants to be a victim. So how can I go from being victimized and surviving to a point of thriving?
Mm-hmm.
And if I can acknowledge that I am angry, I'm hurt, I may feel less than. I've had a client use the term, I feel like damaged goods.
Mm-hmm.
Then I might come to a choice point. Do I want to do something about this? And when I acknowledge that I'd like to do something about it, and here's where forgiveness is a gift you give yourself, you're doing the work that it takes to get rid of that anger and that hurt. So I move from an uncovering phase to a deciding phase. And here's where the counselor might introduce the word forgiveness when the person has not been talking about forgiveness. But the counselor can suggest is not a good word. The counselor might point out that if a person is saying, I don't want to be a prison of the victim of anger anymore, this anger is like a prison, the counselor can say, would you like to get out of that prison? For some people, forgiveness is one way out of the prison.
Mm-hmm.
When I have said something like that to clients, I see them look cross-eyed sometimes and say, what do you mean? I'm not ready to forgive that so-and-so. And I said, you don't do anything before you're ready to do it. What you might like to look at is how this wall of anger and resentment is creating a challenge for you, a struggle for you, outright strangling in some instances. And that gets us into a decision phase where I'm looking at, do I want to do something about this? What does this mean? And then you can do some talking about forgiveness, for instance, does not mean reconciliation. I don't have to invite that person over for dinner and say, I forgive you.
Mm-hmm.
I never even have to speak to the person directly. It's all about me and my own mind saying, I'm ready to let go of this anger I have toward you because all it's doing is hurting me.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want to be hurt anymore. So there's a choice point that comes, and that's the deciding part. And when I've decided that I want to let go of the anger and resentment, then there is the working phase. What are the steps that I need to take excuse me, to be able to do that? And that will be where the creative part of counseling comes in, the old different strokes for different folks.
Mm-hmm.
For some people, gaining the insight that I want to do this is all it takes. For other people, the anger and resentment, I get over that so-and-so keeps coming back around like a boomerang. So however many times it comes back around, maybe we just need to deal with that and help with the readiness.
Mm-hmm.
When the person has able to let go of the anger and resentment, the last step would be a kind of deepening and discovery phase of where I can say, for all the energy that I've used in carrying down this wall of anger, blame, shame, whatever is the combination of affect, I'm free. I don't have all this energy. I don't have to carry that around more. What am I going to do with this? So here's where some of the lessons in life come of what have I learned from this experience? How will I learn? What will I do differently? And as I am ready to use my newfound energy, that may be the point that I have to come to before I can say, and I wish the other person well. Mm-hmm. I don't want him or her to suffer any more than I'd want any other human being to suffer. So in being able to, in essence, apply a principle of beneficence, and if I want to be the best human being that I can be, don't I want no one to have it any worse than anybody else? If I even could put it, you know, so low level of a principle of beneficence, I don't want things to be any worse for this person than any other person, and leave it there. I wish the person I'd get to be as good for this person as any other person might be ratcheting it up some. But getting to that beneficent state and being able to use my energy for redirecting in my life, that's the end stage. What will I now do that is new and different for me? Or what will I pick up that has always been important to me, and now I have time to strengthen and deepen that goal in my life because I have energy.
Right, right. And what I like is looking at not so much as being a victim anymore, but kind of a sense of empowerment to have control over yourself and one's future, one's goals. One of the things I'm wondering, though, you're talking about forgiveness in terms of forgiving others. And I'm wondering if there's a similar process in terms of forgiving oneself for past mistakes.
I have thought about this a great deal. And for looking at different approaches to forgiveness, what the literature has said, and just to point out some folks, and then Robert, and there is a very important, almost primer to people who are interested in forgiveness. It's simply called Theory, Research, Forgiveness, Theory, Research, and Practice. And McCullough and Worthington are the editors of that book, and they've done a lot in the field of research, as field of forgiveness as well. In working with clients who have had traumas in their life and have come to the place of realizing I'm not a victim anymore because I've been able to let go of the hurt and the pain, the anger about it. Two clients in particular have taught me that without their realizing that what they needed or wanted to do was to forgive themselves, that's exactly the point that they're at. Because if the person could say, well, I feel damaged, if they're using any expression of "I feel less than," "I'm not as good as the next person," that kind of shame combined to an anger. Am I mad at myself? Am I putting myself down? Mm-hmm. Am I putting myself down? Wow. If I'm putting myself down, I need to stop doing that. And that's a kind of forgiving oneself process. I need to stop putting myself down because this happened to me. And I need to value myself as much as I would the next person and wish for myself more or less than for anybody else. Mm-hmm. And that certainly can be a showstopper in counseling. So an area of research that I am working on is extending the Enright model to work with people in groups and apply it to their forgiving them. Now that given the year, can they forgive themselves? And the things I'm looking at is using a measure called the internalized shame scale that would get at the statements that I'm really believing about myself, that I am less than. Mm-hmm. And if I can no longer make those statements and have an improved score on the internalized shame scale after a group intervention, then perhaps we can say this model would work toward using with clients individually or in groups to be able to forgive themselves and use the energy they had for putting themselves down for putting themselves up and setting them new goals themselves in their life.
That sounds like really worthwhile work and great research as well. I think about forgiveness, and I think that this really is a process that could be helpful to so many people. I do wonder, are there any limitations, or is there ever a time when forgiveness is not a helpful concept to a client?
I think there are some people who would sincerely believe that some people can't be forgiven. And I have participated in discussions about that. And one of the areas that come up sometimes is, could anybody really forgive an Auschwitz guard? Could anybody who is a Holocaust victim really forgive? Mm-hmm. And Holocaust victims are some of the leaders in forgiveness. So while some may believe there are limitations, I've learned from some of the very people who are saying, well, how can I forgive? They do forgive. Mm-hmm. And again, I think that goes back to, it shows the freedom and the gift that somebody is taking on for themselves. The limitation that I can see, or a difficulty that I can see about forgiveness, is if I'm trying to have empathy for the offender, mm-hmm. If I'm trying to put myself in the offender's place, as sometimes that's an area that you naturally get into. The person is, the client who's trying to doing the forgiving is trying to understand and make sense of the incident, and they'll try to see it from the other person's perspective. Sometimes that's very difficult to do. Sometimes that may not be possible to do because the other person may have been so harmfully defended, mm-hmm. living such a defensive posture. You couldn't really know who the real person is to try to put yourself in that person's shoes. So what we can do is just the best that we can in saying, I'd like to try to imagine myself standing shoulder to shoulder with the person who did the offense. What do I see of the world from that person's eyes? Mm-hmm. And that's all I can do, is get into it as best as I can. And again, with the notion of acknowledging what I believe to be that person's reality, then let go of it. Let go of it. Mm-hmm. Easier said than done, I realize. But mm-hmm. I think we get into some of the difficulties or the challenges when we look at, well, how can I possibly put myself in that other person's shoes? And I wouldn't want to. We don't have to do that which we don't want to, but can we allow ourselves the freedom not to carry around that anger anymore? Can we at least put down the anger? That might be incomplete forgiveness because I didn't get to the end point of trying to see the world, the other person's vantage point, and wish them well. But if I can put down my anger, my resentment, I've done a lot for myself.
Mm-hmm. And even that can take quite a bit of time. But like you said, again, it's a process and it's a choice the client makes.
I think an area where it could be explored more is with people who were victims of sexual abuse as children.
Mm-hmm.
So many children cover up what happened to them, and then it comes out when the proverbial what hits the wall. Somewhere later in life, it could be their 30s, their 40s, even their 50s. And when they are acknowledging the reality of what happened, how do I help, using some of the old chemical dependency language, the inner child within grow up?
Yeah.
The outside person, the public self, and the inside person, the private self, what part of me are mature my age level? Typically, the intellectual part of me or the cognitive part of me, I may have gone to college, I may be an accomplished professional in a certain arena, so I am thinking and I am doing. The behaving part of me may be very congruent with an X number of old person in that work arena. But how about the emotional part of me? How emotionally mature am I, or did wall off what my feelings like and cover them up? And I can do feelings in the here and now, but those hurt feelings and the mm-hmm. victim feelings, that kind of trauma presents many challenges in counseling. And I think one of the areas that could be addressed is when the person has emotionally matured and come to a more integrated, healthy, whole self, the notion of forgiveness might be introduced at that point.
Mm-hmm. So certainly there are times when this is not the first goal or the first issue that's introduced. There's other work on the way that's important.
First things first, I'd say, and lots of important goals. Some of the maturing as a person piece needs to be looked at, whatever is the presenting problem of a client. Who is the client who is sitting here with me? In their outside self, I might see, you know, very attractive, capable, and for what I could determine, lovable person. But what is it really like on the inside for that person? How do they know themselves in terms of their feelings, thoughts, and behaviors, the basic psychological process of feeling, thinking, and behaving, mm-hmm. or emotion, intellect, and will? How do they know themselves in terms of their physical self? You know, are we wearing our bodies out? Are we working so that we think, well, if I just get 4 or 5 hours of sleep, I can get up the next day and get going and get done the 20 extra things I had put on my from the day before? Does the person take care of their body or take it for granted sometime? They're in between. So there's feelings, thoughts, behaviors, physical self, our social selves. Mm. We don't get our needs met back. Even if we have many things going on in our life, and we say, I don't have time for a full-on social life right now, we are social humans. We need mm-hmm. to interact with others. And how do we deal with that? And then there are spiritual selves. And I like to include that in this whole person wheel that I use with clients and put that right in the middle, because the spiritual part of us is, at the very basic level, that which gives meaning and purpose to our lives. And has the person grown up in a way, for whatever is the chronological age the person is, with knowing himself or herself in all those parts? And could answer the question, this is what is life-giving to me.
Mm-hmm.
Here's some purpose I have in my life. Here is what is meaningful to me. Here's what made my heart sing. And for people to be able to say, yes, I have a heart song and here's what it is. I think, a spiritual discussion, and I'm delighted to see more of that coming into the counseling realm. And when I can look at all the parts of me and then look at what might be some of the barriers to my being as whole or fully alive as I can be, that's where anger and resentment toward myself or others, and that when a counselor might introduce the notion, well, do you know we're really talking about forgiveness here? And then do a little bit of work on forgiveness.
I like the phrase you used earlier, the first things first, and sometimes you really have to know the whole person. And like you said, the wellness wheel or wheel as you use really makes sense in that regard. Some of the folk questions as well. What is this person really about on the inside? What's life like for them spiritually, emotionally, intellectually, physically?
And when's the last time the person checked that out with himself or herself? We live in such a demanding world that oftentimes we're meeting the expectations that everybody else has about us. And when's the last time we checked out what our expectations of ourselves are? Hello. What are they? And do I have an agenda? Do I have a plan other than the agenda that was given me by my boss, my children, my family, whomever? And that being able to be tuned into oneself and pay attention to oneself, I think, is a real prerequisite to being as healthy and whole.
And I think that for the listeners, the question you raise may be one that they need contemplating now as well. In wrapping up about forgiveness, any final thoughts or suggestions you'd want to offer our listeners in terms of working with clients in this area?
I guess one of the pieces I'd like to offer, and it kind of goes back to in the beginning my saying, the whole notion of forgiveness first came up from me, a religious perspective, and then it got tucked away because never the twain shall meet. I'd like to go back to encouraging counselors to become more comfortable for whatever that takes for them. We need to check that out with ourselves. What do I need to do so that I can be comfortable in asking my client questions like, what's important to you? What's life giving to you? When are you happy? Do you have a set of religious beliefs that inform your life so that you are looking at helping them tune in as fully as possible to what are the guidelines that I go by? And are the guidelines that I'm using guidelines by choice that I've been conditioned by, so that I'm looking at how I make decisions, how I will make choices for myself in my life. And to the extent that as a counselor I can be comfortable helping the client explore that, will naturally get into all kinds of areas that I may be more or less comfortable with. And that's a time for me to talk with a trusted colleague and do the old consult kind of guideline. That's not just talk, that's important for us to be able to collaborate with one another and to sit down and say, has anybody ever brought up to you XYZ? And how did you respond to that? Where can I go to find out more about that? And become more at peace within our own skins about taking on some of the challenges that clients might offer. And if we're finding that the challenges is too great, because nobody can deal with everybody all of the time, then having some guidelines for ourselves about what I'll do when I meet that challenge, how I'll make the quote appropriate referral, and how I will take care of myself. That's an important piece for us to remember, important counselor self-care.
Absolutely. And that we can definitely be helpful only to a certain extent. Certainly there are times when we do have to refer out, and it's okay to not be the expert on everything.
We can't be the be-all and the end-all. We're not the alpha and the omega.
Though we try. Well, Nancy, I appreciate your time and talk to us about forgiveness today. Most informative information.
Thank you for giving me an opportunity to talk with you about a topic that's near and dear to my heart.
You've just heard a conversation with Dr. Nancy Taylor of John Carroll University about forgiveness in counseling.
Look for previous podcasts, show notes, and listener feedback on the podcast website at counselaraudiosource.net. Listeners can leave comments or questions for our interview guests or hosts through our Skype.com internet telephone ID, Counselor Audio Source, or by calling 330-871-4242. Counseling techniques and interventions discussed in the Counselor Audio Source broadcast are meant for use by counseling professionals, and Counselor Audio Source is not held liable for any use of the techniques mentioned in the program. Our music bed today is Memorial Day from Jamie Beauchamp. His and other PodSafe music can be found in the PodSafe Music Network at podshow.com. Counselor Audio Source is licensed under the Creative Commons, a nonprofit organization offering a flexible copyright for creative work.